Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 7th of August. And today we have Tammy Watchhorn, the Change Ninja. So this week we are again supported by Tamplo. Tamplo is a online tool that turns meetings into actions and has a number of different features. The bit I'm going to talk about today is around the project and task management and the follow-up. Essentially, you have a clear dashboard that shows you an overview of scheduled tasks, alert for late tasks, an overview of team's progress. It saves you jumping into your Outlook and being diverted by that morass of email that we get. You can create your own daily plan in there, or you can, as a project manager, you may be assigning tasks to people, and those people can look at those, have their own daily plans, adding in their own specific items they've got to do, as well as the things allocated to them. For the project management point of view, you get a dedicated dashboard with a list of tasks, knowing what people are working on each project, and there's a load of collaboration capability in there, with the goal of getting no task left undone, more efficiency and motivation, and clear action plans. So if you want to see what this is all about, jump along to tinyurl.com/Nigel Creaser Tamplo. That's all one word, Nigel Creaser Tamplo. Have fun. Well, these weeks seem to be scooting along really quick. Doesn't seem like a fortnight since the last time I recorded one of these. I've just finished this week for the first holiday I've got. I've got was it 7 days, 10 days? I can't remember where. Off now, which is great. So I'm scooting away. I'm getting along to watch some of the Commonwealth Games on Monday. Going to watch the judo there, cheering on all of the home nations teams, mainly the England one, I suppose, but it's meant to be English. But I'm a bit Heinz 57, so I should probably cheer them all on. So I'm really looking forward to that, and looking forward to spending some time away with the family and chilling out for a few weeks. Which I think is, as project managers, is so important for us to disconnect. So I'm locking laptops in cupboards and not taking them with me, and kind of being present. For want of a better word. But what's happened over the last couple of weeks, it's been just busy days at work, trying to get myself sorted as ready for holiday, as we all do. Always find that last day before holiday you feel even more productive than you do the rest of the time. And I just received recently a copy of Tammy's book, Dr. Tammy Watchhorn, who you've got to listen to in a minute, the Change Ninja Handbook. So I may take that along with me, and that will be part of my summer reading. And just a little note for your diary on that, Tammy's book actually comes out on the 22nd of August. So it's the day after the second part of this show goes out. So there's a good chance you'll miss it in there. I think she's got a special offer of 99 pence on that day. And what she is asking is if people can just maybe focus on, say, 10 o'clock, I think it is, and buy it around then, and that'll help with visibility and for it to be, for people to see how well it's doing. And to be honest, at 99p, that's an absolute bargain. I've got a physical copy, but the 99p digital one on Amazon, I'm going to grab as well. There'll be links in the show notes, so... or just pop along to the shop and you'll be able to grab it there. But like I urge you, put it in your calendar, little warning to go and grab it on the 22nd. I'm kind of done a couple of prep podcast conversations, which I'm looking forward to in the back end of the year. Those should be great fun. Had some interesting technical challenges in that... typically when I'm recording them, I've been using Zoom, which has been great, work, easy, dead simple. Zoom have now implemented, even for the one-to-one conversations, a 40-minute limit. As you know, I'm kind of bootstrapped with this and kind of don't have a lot of cash knocking around to be able to fund the podcast. So I've been looking at alternatives, so I'm probably going to be trying a new product called Riverside FM. So we'll see what that's like after the summer holidays, because now I'm not recording any more podcasts until September time, which is just the way it is, I suppose. Good time to have a bit of a break. So that's it. I'm going to be short and sweet today. Some people say I already am. And I'll let you get listening to the Change Ninja, Dr. Tammy Watchhorn. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Tammy Watchhorn, the Change Ninja, to the podcast. Tammy has a background in project and program management, organizational change, and innovation, alongside many years of mentoring, designing, and facilitating workshops, events, and training using face-to-face and virtual solutions, basically helping individuals and teams be their best. She's a change agent, educator, facilitator, innovator, coach, and currently is director of, and I don't know how to say this properly, ANAS,
and I'm hoping that's not too...
director of Pentacle Scotland, and an associate Sparking Performance. So that's we'll find out what all those are in a bit. So Tammy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
That's brilliant. So do you want to just give people a little bit of background? Where you're from, what you're doing?
So my background is, as you say, lots of project management, big organisational change. I worked in the National Health Service for a long time. And kind of went through the ranks that most people do. First, you do the project management, get into program management, started doing more strategic, and some of the bigger change programs, did all the certification and, you know, sitting in a room for 5 days to pass and get the certificate. And latterly moved into innovation. Mm-hmm. And my big kind of insight, I think, in that journey, or towards the end, I guess, the last few years, was that all of the change required you to work in different ways with people, because it was all about people. It wasn't about process. It wasn't about getting a certificate. It wasn't about having a risk register. It was about how you navigate the system, which is built around processes that you can't change, but mostly guarded by people. And so I, particularly for innovation, focused all of my efforts and energy on how can we innovate how we work and change how we work together, collaborate to do good stuff, rather than focusing on gadgets and shiny things that might look good, but they're just gadgets and shiny things.
Yeah, that sounds fair. And where are you? You're in the UK, obviously, from, well, I know that, but whereabouts in the UK are you?
I am in Scotland, recently moved out to the country. So I moved from being a city girl into the sticks and just starting to explore what that's like.
Right, I see. That makes a very big different exploring then from our conversation earlier.
It's a big change for a ninja to make.
Yeah, that's massive change, massive. Well, it's great to have you on. And obviously, the one thing that we are talking about is your new book that I believe you said is out in August.
Yeah,
Change Ninja Handbook.
Yeah.
Now, and we've got another bunch of items that we're in what you're doing at the moment. So what's a change ninja?
So I had all of these stories of trying to lead and deliver change and take people with me and get other teams leading change. And as I say, it was always really challenging. And what I found was, if you tried to do it down, tried to make change happen using the traditional process and routes, you just got stuck. The health service is just so against risk. It's high on bureaucracy, it's high on governance, it's very hierarchical. So nothing happened. And I kind of realized that to get anything done, you had to stay a little bit under the radar, focus on people and individuals, working out who you need to get on board and shifting that. And I started to get some traction and started to really shift things. I introduced things, like Cube, which is Cube with a Q, which was a virtual way of working way before COVID and lockdown. Yep. And it completely changed how I worked. I think you've had Eddie Obeng on before.
Yeah,
so I started working with Eddie and it was just completely transformed. It really innovated how we worked. We started being more productive, we were more efficient, we had more fun, we were doing proper collaboration. We were getting more time back to do more value-added stuff. I actually got rid of email in the health service, which nobody believes me, but I managed to get rid of my inbox pretty much because we just started working in a different way. But we had to keep it. It couldn't go up at a senior level. It couldn't be a big rollout thing. So it was done where it was needed and people got interested and kind of creating that community of other change ninjas. Delivering the results, but not, you know, not boasting about how we'd done it or bragging about the ways of doing it, and just getting it in that ninja way, you know. And other people would often take credit for it, which was fine. You know, find somebody who will own this at a senior level and talk about it. You can get much more done. So it was, I had all of these stories. They're quite funny because we go into battle every day quite often in organizations trying to get things done and trying to understand why those battles were and how to navigate around them. And I wanted to do something funny with them. I wanted to get them out there, but make them kind of teachable moments and learning moments for people in a fun way, which is where the Change Ninja Handbook kind of came from. It's a very interactive, gamified adventure book. It's very different to your typical academic tome of how to make things happen.
I like that. I like the idea of that. It's something that it's kind of, has scratched the surface of, well, the title of this podcast and my book was around that kind of trying to do something around educating through parody, through stories and things like that on the project management tools and techniques, rather than, as you say, there are some, actually, I think if you look at the academic tomes that are out there, there's some amazing work that's already been done. It's already there. And if that's what you need, there's the PMIs, the APMs, all those organizations invest a lot of time, a lot of money getting those things academically right.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant and they should work. But the problem is as you kind of alluded to there, once you put some squishy humans in and they're different drivers, different backgrounds, different experience, different cultures, that's when things, you have to adapt things to be able to get stuff done, and whether it's with your team or your stakeholders. And it can be frustrating, can't it, where you think, why aren't those people doing what I need them to do? It's obvious to me, but being able to understand what they're saying, what their point of view and what's their, I think you mentioned risk earlier, that risk aversion is I find is the biggest resistance to change, whether that be me putting in an IT system and having to convince the life service people who are taking it to run, convincing them that and understanding that actually me doing this to them may cause them to be working at the weekend and away from their family. Therefore, why should they take that risk? Unless I've got a way of fixing it if it goes wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because I think quite often the risk aversion isn't real risk aversion. It's just something that person, they've got a reason for not wanting to do a particular thing. Yeah. And so the old idea of the change ninja is trying to understand why and finding ways to shift them so that they can see the value of what it is you're trying to do. And so really working on individual by individual basis, which sounds like it, you know, it's quite time consuming. But if you can get those people on board really early, you can make up speed, you know, you make up progress so quickly, you'll get things out there and they'll champion it. So really investing in understanding individuals and their perspectives and approaching things from there, you know, putting yourself, and that's really tacky saying it, putting yourself in their shoes, but really trying to understand what it is that would shift their thinking so that it's a positive for them.
Yeah, well, that putting yourself in their shoes is a, as you say, it's kind of a little bit of a cliche, but it's an illustration of making you think about, actually, if I think about that point, and that old term, walk a mile in someone else's shoes, isn't it? It's that same thing of and to before you criticize something or understand why they are or aren't doing something. And I've done it myself, where you sit there banging your head against the wall thinking, why is this person so against me and my project? And it's not about me and my project. Like, I love to see, that's why I've got a podcast, it's all about me, isn't it? So do you know what I mean? It's not about you, it's not about your project, it's about them, and it's about their commitments, and it's about their team even, or it might be their customers, or in like with the NHS, it might be their patients that they, that's who they are really worried about. And getting without getting, putting yourself in their place, you're never going to get it, are you? And
no,
I suppose asking is part of it, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, they might know things that you don't. So again, you know, they might be saying no for a very good reason. So there's a lot of learning to be had in those engagements as well.
Brilliant. So tell us a bit about what's the structure of the book? What's the kind of out, a bit of, I think you've given us a little bit of an outline there, but kind of how have you pulled this together? Tell us more.
So that was the challenge. So I was sitting on all these stories. So two challenges. One, how do you present things in a different way that's going to be interesting and people are going to get something from? And two, I mentioned to Eddie that I'd always wanted to write a book. And he says, whatever you do, don't write a book. It will just burn up so much time. So that was a kind of gauntlet for me. Anybody who gives me a challenge like that, I'm off. And all of a sudden, this idea came to me. And it was based on Choose Your Own Adventure books, which I don't know if you read them as a kid.
I did, yeah. Not a lot, but a few of them I did read. Yeah. And I did enjoy them. That jumped to another page, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to, you know, you're given a choice. Do you go left? Do you go up the mountain? Do you go down the river? And you go to the page. So I just thought it would lend itself, the stories would lend themselves really well to that. So it's a Choose Your Own Adventure type book. I can't use as Choose Your Own Adventure because it is trademarked.
Oh, really?
They managed to sue. There was the film out a couple of years ago. Black Mirror chap made, so they sued him for labeling it as a Choose Your Own Adventure. Oh, right. But it's a Choose Your Own Adventure type book. So there's a story happens and you have to make a decision. And as the reader, you decide what you're going to do. Are you going to go into battle with this person? Are you going to give up on this idea? Are you going to take the easy route because that's what they're asking you to do? Or are you going to fight? So each story, and there's 10 stories, and then there's some other stories in there as well, which I'll explain in a minute. But each story has a decision to make. And sometimes there's other decisions further in. And then you get the outcome of that decision. And with them following that, there's a fable. So a bit like Aesop's fable, which again has quite another quirky story. All the stories are true, but they're not based on real people. So that, you know, there's stories that happen to me, but the characters aren't real. And then with the fable, you get the learning. So if it's about stakeholder management, or if it's about how to identify risk, or if it's dealing with a difficult person, there's the learning and insight that goes with it that you get from the story. And then there's a tool that you can use, and that's linked to the decisions you make. So you can directly relate the decisions to a tool that would either help you with that decision, or that if you went through it again, you would use that tool and you wouldn't end up with a game over kind of sign. So it's very gamified.
Nice.
And it takes you through all of it. And they're quite funny stories. They're quite, they're individual stories in that they happen to me, but they're all quite common. You know, they're the kind of things that we've all experienced. So I think it's very relatable. And then I say there's a bunch of tools that you can then go away and use and have the story to kind of apply to, so you could work out in the situation, what would I do next and how would I go about doing it? So it's not a heavy tome. It's meant to be lighthearted and fun with the learning and the tools. Yeah.
That sounds excellent. So that gives you that tooling. And I suppose, I don't know whether you're planning this, Stealing Thunder. Is it designed to be something you do on your own? Or is it designed as something that you have a group, say you've got a group of you in a room and you're doing some training on project management? Is it designed to be able to do it that way as well?
Yeah, it wasn't designed that way, but that's, I've been thinking lately about how you turn it into a team development tool as well. So you could use it in a team day. People could go off and, you know, read out the story, go off and make your decisions and come back with what you would do and how you would go about it and share that learning. So it could easily be adapted to that. And I'm looking at building a kind of masterclass off the back of it.
Brilliant.
And somebody I work a lot with in that health service still, who was talking about maybe turning it into a game, an actual board game. So, you know, there's oodles of ideas flying around.
Yeah, I've seen, you say the board game, that's a really good idea as well, because I've seen one of my previous conversations I've had with people about diversity, and there's some diversity games that are out there, a couple of training courses that I've been on, there's ones Mental health. I've seen a few mental health board games. And then another one we did, which was absolutely, it was all about negotiation, which is a fantastic method of doing stuff, which one of our senior members of the organization, senior project people, they play a godlike priest figure that allocates stones to gods and things. Hey, it's all very thing. And then you go in there and you're trying to deal with this and you inevitably fail. But when you play the end of the session and you go through it and they explain, right, when you did this, you were doing this, this, and this in your negotiation. You've given up your base acceptable bottom by doing this, or you had done this really well because you'd done it. And there was all these things you need someone who can facilitate it to be able to read the room and read what they're doing very well. But it's a very, very good way of caricaturing what you would do. Yeah. Whereas normally it would be quite a boring reading through of this is how you negotiate. This is your negotiate. Whereas that playing gamifying thing does work. And I can kind of see how, I've got this. I've currently got this image of obviously with Cube and the stuff that you guys are there. I can see someone doing this session in Cube as well.
That's one of the other ideas. You know, Master Change Ninja Masterclass on Cube different for not everyone will know what Cube is, but it's a virtual work environment with lots of different campuses and different types of space, whatever you're doing. But, you know, whatever decision you make could take you to a different space. So it might be off to see the chief exec. It might be to go and convince your team that this is a really good piece of work. It might be to go and run a workshop on something, or to say no and go home and give up. So it could really work in the virtual space. Yeah. So there's lots of ideas.
Because it helped. I don't, maybe from your point of view, it sounded like from what you were saying there, a lot of your experience was in, and I imagine with the scale of organization you had with the NHS, that a lot of the work was matrixed and very virtualized. I'm guessing, did you have many options where you had all of the team in the same room, that was your team, or was it very much this remote, as we are now with a lot of things?
So traditionally, and I'd say still probably in the main, you know, pre-COVID, it was trying to get everyone in the room, which again made it impossible to do anything, you know, trying to get clinicians from all over Scotland into a room to make a decision. It would take you months and months just to get the data in the calendar. So as I say, I introduced Cube quite early in that innovation piece, and we got some incredible things done. I can remember one particular project was, it was around data and what data is used for clinical decisions, and getting clinicians together to agree a single data set, which is really challenging because they're really smart.
Yeah.
And they've all got an opinion on what they think is the right data, and they've all done the research and read, you know, all read different things. So getting them together in a room to agree a data set and then implement it, they'd been trying for like 2 years. So I got them onto Cube, and 3 weeks later, we'd agreed it, prototyped it, tested it, and implemented it. And we did it after surgery, because these were surgeons, so we did it at the end of the day, so we weren't trying to get them out of, you know, they were still able to do their job, they'd washed up, we'd got a cup of tea, we did it at 6 o'clock, just met for an hour a week, and we just got on with it, because a Cube creates this very level playing field. It's a really good way to get rid of the hierarchy and strip out some of those opinions that, you know, that can get in the way. I'm not saying people can still have opinions, but there's that thing that happens when you get people together in a room.
Why do you think it is that things like Cube and potentially things, I suppose, you look at the metaverse on its way there, and I know the Cube is kind of a prequel to that in my view in some ways, but
a betaverse.
Yeah, betaverse. So why do you think it does that? Why do you think it makes that barriers go away?
Yeah, I think some of it is you're not on camera. There's none of the visuals. There's none of the posturing that goes on. People relax into the space really quickly. It's quite hard to explain. You kind of have to experience it. But you're all these little kind of chunky Q-bots, as we call them. You don't look like humans. You're really listening intently. We've got ways of working so people aren't talking over each other. We write on sticky notes before we talk, so everyone gets to put their opinion up. we do something called spin casting, where we check in with everyone in alphabetical order, so everyone knows they're going to get a say. So there's not that initial everyone jumping in with what they think the right answer is, because we do it in a very different way. And I think it just creates, because everyone looks the same and everyone's got a smile on the face, it just creates a really nice environment and people just get on with it. And because everybody, that's the thing, everybody wants the good result. They're not disagreeing because they want a bad outcome.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're too passionate about a good outcome to give up on what they think is the right answer. So it's not that anybody wants it to be a bad thing. And it just gives them that. It's quite a psychological safe space to be able to have the dialogue without trying to win the argument all the time and get their views in first. And you can facilitate that face to face, but it's harder.
And I think that it's kind of, because what's running through my mind there is a kind of, if you're on a conference call, and as you say, it's kind of in the behaviors that you would have in a, when we used to have, and it's funny, I was talking to someone the other day when they were talking about conference calls, about the fact that not long before the old lockdown and stuff, conference calls was what everyone was on, rather than on video Zoom chats. And that was the thing. Yeah. And the behavior on the conference call without a video call was that you would have people on mute, they would be working away while on the call. Knowing that some, and I think again, that the way to get around that is that knowing that you're coming to those people with them on their list, and you're expecting them to contribute something through that, does draw that. And you can do it in a, you can be a, I imagine you can be a little bit more bullish with people in that virtual environment than in a physical environment. Of if someone is sat on their phone in a physical environment, to call them out over it, or on their laptop, to call them out over it's quite difficult to do.
Yeah.
Virtual environment, you can't always see them doing it. But again, it's how do you, how do you do that?
So Cube doesn't have cameras on, which I think helps. So you're really listening to what people are saying. You're not making any judgments. And we do it without thinking, you know, if somebody's rolling their eyes or roll, you know, and that, you know, sometimes it's okay to roll your eyes. Because we all do these things. But
well, the thing is, you roll your eyes for, again, you make an assumption of why someone rolls their eye, don't you?
Yeah.
If you see someone roll their eyes, and you go, oh, but they're not happy with that. They might be thinking, oh, why didn't I think of that?
Exactly. I'm so, you're making an assumption and you're reacting to it. So you can see something as being negative that isn't. So I think it does get rid of a lot of that happens. The other thing I think with Cube is it's full of Eddie's tools, which we call PETs, performance enhancement tools. So we'll bring something up if we're doing a business case or a project brief, and we'll all just put up sticky notes onto the template. And it's so fast, you can't be on your email or your phone because you'll miss it.
Yeah.
And we don't have long sessions. We wouldn't have a 3-hour meeting on Cube. We would have a 30-minute session and we would just get some work done. And we might have that, we have them more frequently. So Cube team meet every day for 15 minutes for coffee and we do what we need to do. Mm. We wouldn't dream of having a 3-hour team meeting. Because that's when people are drifting off and people haven't got that. But if you know you're going to be in for 15 minutes, you're all going to share what you're doing for the next 2 days, update each other, ask for help, and it's just 15 minutes. You're just very focused, which is hard to do virtually. And I think some of the challenge with what we've now got with kind of Zoom teams is we've just exported all of what we did in the old world into this, I'll say virtual, but into the video call world. So we've got all of our bad behaviors into this world, and it's worse because we're all looking at ourselves, which is really energy. Your brain is just going, I don't want to look at myself for 3 hours.
No,
we haven't learned how to work in this space yet, I don't think.
I'd agree. I think I described it as performance fatigue. Yeah. And I liken it to the fact that if you're running a workshop, and a face-to-face workshop, and you on your own, and you're running a team of 20 people or whatever, you are the person at the front. You are performing all the time. You are on it. all the time. And at the end of those days, when you're doing those sessions, you're absolutely battered.
Yeah.
Because you know that everything you're doing is part of what's going on. Even when there's other people doing stuff, you're part of that whole thing. And I think that's the problem with that we all get on video is, and we're doing it a little bit now with this, and it's harder to do these kind of conversations because I'm still looking at myself thinking, am I looking at the camera? Am I looking at you? What am I doing? Is my leg it? What? I want to take a drink. You know, all these extra processing. And then you get all of us in, when we're just on a call, you can see yourself.
Yeah.
You can't pick up, and if you had a table of people and you were in that workshop or in that meeting, you're sat, right? Someone's talking over there. Great. You're not, you might be listening, but you're not being looked at. So you immediately go, your demeanor will relax. You will relax and you will just pay attention and just there. And then it's back on you. And then your attention, yeah, I'm doing, and you change. But when you've got the camera on you, you're on high alert all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And everyone's on high alert all the time. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, the emotional energy. And I when we started in this lockdown thing, I was very keen because I wanted to keep the relationships because I was worried about people's mental health. Put the video on, let's talk, let's see each other, make sure that I know you're okay, you know I'm okay, that kind of thing. And it did occur to me eventually that actually that wasn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
Though I do think it is useful to be on video, depending on the nature of the conversation. But it's certain things where if you've got a round robin conversation on the team, there's no point doing it. Or if you are doing it, saying, right, guys, when have you got your bit on? Pop your camera on. That's potentially beneficial. But the rest of the time, it's like you can turn the camera off and you're suddenly sat back and relaxed like you would be in the meeting. And maybe in the meeting, you'd be checking your phone or checking your laptop email or whatever. But actually, the energy level that you have to expend is massively reduced.
Yeah. And we've forgotten that you can just pick up your phone and call someone.
Yeah, I know. My phone rang the other day. I nearly fell over.
Yeah, you don't need to put an hour's meeting in.
No, that's it.
Just call them.
I think
if you're on Cube, you can just send them a little message in the lobby and have a 5-minute cup of tea and a chat. Which is what we do.
I think the IM and using IM in a manner and using rooms within those is a really good way of doing it. I think you're right. We do end up having meetings. Like I've set mine all up so that it only ever books a meeting for either 10, 25, 50, you know what I mean? Knocking off those 5 minutes at the end as well. So, which I'm not very good at keeping to, but I was never that good at keeping to half an hour. Do you know what I mean? It was always going to go to 35 minutes. So now if I'm aiming at 25 and I'm ending up at 30, we're still getting an improvement.
Yeah.
But I've my diary now, I've changed it to being every 15 minutes as the breakdown on it so I can see where those slots are and try to do that. But then that does the smaller things can, a lot of context switching I find is can be quite tiring as well.
Context switching. So if you're going back to back meetings, switching from one project to another, you're not going to have time or energy to do any of the actual work.
No. And that's it. I blocking out time and having breaks and things like that. I think it's something that I think we do it when you're in an office, when you're sat with a bunch of people, someone starts talking about last night's football, or last night's Bake Off, or last night's Love Island, you have a break because you talk to someone
about
it.
You have to escape the chat. Yeah.
You either got to go or you're going to join in. Either way, you have a mental break.
It's not as intense.
Yeah, and whereas when you're at home, that bang to bang to bang to bang to bang, and I found that even at the end of the day, I used to have a commute, and I hit the situation where I step out of my door into being dad and being husband straight away. And I never had that break. And I think when you'd had a day of bang, 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 bang. And it broke me, to be quite frank, listeners will know. And I got to the point where I decided, right, now, since getting back into work again, it's a case of going, right, I'm not getting burnt through the day. If I've got a day that looks like I'm going to be hammered, I do something about it now.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was kind of observing all of that during the kind of first lockdown. and seeing, you know, what was happening. I'd been working remotely for probably 3 or 4 years, so it was you know, the same for me, and I'd started working for myself as well, so I've more observed it than been part of it. But Joe Stanford, who I work with in the NHS quite a lot, asked me to work with a neuroscientist called Tibby Vera, and to look at how we can create some training and learning around that kind of psychological space using neuroscience, understanding what's going on with all of that, and learning how to hack your brain and do various things. And we've introduced that into parts of the NHS, and we're just getting such good feedback from it. You can just kind of hear a real switch in people. Again, it's a very practical hands-on thing. We use Lego Serious Play quite a lot for it, which allows you to really tap into what's going on. So here's a scenario, build it. What do you feel? And as soon as you connect the feelings to what's going on consciously in your brain, you can start to shift that. Yeah. And it's just been amazing to see this. The best way to learn is insights. We talked earlier about the, you know, gamifying things. You'll get your insights if you have a go at it, which is the only way really you can learn and make real change happen for yourself. So being able to apply real life scenarios and building it and understanding physically what's going on, emotionally what's going on, mentally what's going on, to shift that. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing in the next couple of years, because you say there's the burnout, there's people wanting to go back to the office so they can have that commute. I mean, who wants a commute, really?
I know
traffic for 40 minutes just so you can do that switch between. So we need to really, I think, put a lot of time and effort into this, otherwise people are going to be really, really affected in the next couple of years with burnout and their well-being.
Yeah. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that first part of that interview with Tammy. Come back in a couple of weeks and we'll have the second instalment. In the meantime, look after yourself. Cheers now. Bye.